Have you ever wondered what it's like to be buried in an avalanche?
Weird foreign feeling of despair.
Or how it feels to crash a skydive?
I remember hearing a thud, feeling my body hit the ground.
Or how you would react if you were being attacked by an alligator?
At the end of my leg is this huge alligator head on my leg.
These are the stories you'll hear on the podcast called What Was That Like? True stories told by the actual person who went through it. You'll hear from a victim of an attack.
Dragging me into the bathroom and saying, I'm going to kill you, now you're going to die.
You'll hear from a man who discovered a baby.
How could this be? How could there be a baby on the ground?
And you'll hear actual 911 calls.
Clinky County 911.
There's a man at my back door. He's trying to get in.
What Was That Like is a podcast about real people in unreal situations. Search for What Was That Like on any podcast app or at whatwasthatlike.com.
I'm Richard Serrett. Join me on Strange Planet for in-depth conversations with the world's top paranormal investigators, alien abductees, Bigfoot trackers, monster hunters, time travelers, alternative archaeologists, remote viewers, and more.
As I was on the way to Area 51, I was stopping on the side of the road and just taking measurements, and I found this one spot where time slowed down by a fraction of a second. It's not supposed to do that.
From the two big categories, animal mutilations and human abductions, you have to conclude that genetic material is being harvested.
Well, I reached for a rifle, and I turned and looked, and it was already moving away, and it was descending the bluff. There's no way any human could have went down it. It was probably a 75-degree angle straight down, almost.
On Richard Serrett's Strange Planet, we're redefining reality. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Do not go any further. Turn around, go home.
The last thing I ever saw was that hospital room, and that being my last memory of sight, and that trauma of suddenly waking up from an operation that didn't save anything, and the consultant coming in his jeans on a Saturday morning going, how many fingers am I holding up? That will haunt me probably for the rest of my life.
This week's interviewee is one of the most entertaining and exceptional guests that have ever graced the metaphorical stage of the On the Edge with Andrew Gold podcast. Lucy Edwards is a 24-year-old British journalist who holds the distinction of being BBC Radio 1's first ever blind presenter. She's since worked across the channel from BBC World News to BBC Radio 4 and has run a marathon and started up an extremely successful YouTube channel, Lucy Edwards, where her makeup tutorial and videos answering questions you were too polite or timid to ask have racked up millions of views. And now I'm fortunate enough to be able to interview her. She's a bit like me in that she's a very chatty journalist, so do forgive us flittering back and forwards a little as we delve into Braille, language learning, Robbie Williams, John Ronson, and inspiration porn. If you don't know what that last one is, it's not quite as exciting as it sounds. We talk about the details behind how Lucy lost her sight and how she learned to cope, along with helpful sidekick Olga. Olga's a dog, by the way. We actually spoke a couple of months ago, but timed the episode to coincide with the International Day of Disabled Persons on December the 3rd. Lucy talks in the episode about how the modern BBC studios she worked in were not equipped for blind people. A lot of media attention has rightly helped redress societal imbalances across different subsections of society. However, disabled people remain totally under the radar, and nobody seems to care. Well, we should do. And we can start by hearing Lucy out. Not because she's blind, but because she has so much to say and she's a fantastic journalist. By now, there may or may not be ads in the show, but they are coming. Remember, you can ensure you have the ads-free version forever for less than 70 pence or cents or something an episode. And that'll also be a way of showing your support for the podcast and helping it to grow. Just go to patreon.com/AndrewGold to become one of my producers or directors. There are all sorts of memberships and tiers up there that you can choose from. I had put up a special offer for the first memberships, and that got swallowed up in minutes, which was surprising and amazing, and I thank you all for that. I've put up a new special offer. If you sign up in the next 2 weeks, today is 30th of November 2020, you'll get 15% off the monthly fee. For all of time, it's less than one cup of coffee per month and keeps the podcast running. 'Tis the festive season, after all. So that's patreon.com/AndrewGold. I'll be back at the end, but here's Lucy. It's recording now, so you know, so you don't say anything horrible.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, because sometimes I don't tell people, and then after a while they're like, oh, have you started recording? I can't believe that. And, you know, I should have said something. So now I've said something, and yeah.
You know. we know where we're at. Oh, my gosh. Honestly, when you asked me to do the podcast, I was like, you've got such a podcasting name, you know, Andrew Gold, you know. You'd have the tagline of Gold Standard or something.
You know what? Good. People have put reviews saying that. They keep saying Gold Standard. Yeah, it's funny. My whole life, a lot of people sing that song. Do you know that song? Gold, always believe.
I literally was going to sing it to you.
Oh my God. My whole life. The people come up and they do that. And then they also sometimes, because there was a singer that you probably don't know of, because a lot of people, I say our age, I think you're a bit younger than me, but our age don't really know him. But his name was the same name as mine, Andrew Gold. So people sing his songs at me.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I'm not too aware of him, but yeah. You're the only Andrew Gold on my radar.
Oh, thank God. He died actually a few years ago, quite young. He was 51, and it was about, I guess, like 10 years ago, I think. And I was, I just happened to be reading in the news and it said Andrew Gold dies. And I was like, oh my God.
Oh no.
Yeah, I had to check it wasn't me.
I love it. So funny. You're like, I'm not dead. I can confirm.
Yeah.
Hot off the press.
Oh God. I wish I could do this in person, this podcast, but obviously with Corona and stuff, and also just it's a whole, but like I've got these amazing chocolates that I would share with you. I've got these Lindor. Do you ever have those? These balls.
Oh, are they the red ones?
Yeah, except I've got these special brown ones, which have got like little they're really hard to get in England, but I live in Berlin, that's where I am now. And they've got these.
Do you?
Yeah. And they've got these little hazelnut.
Amazing.
Have you been to Berlin?
No, I haven't. But one of my best friends is currently there now. She's she's having a bit of a jolly, I think, while she's off work. So yeah, she's having a good time. Apparently, it's meant to be amazing.
Yeah,
you based there for work or?
I've been here for just like years. My girlfriend, she's from Argentina. I used to live in Argentina. I made documentaries and stuff out there. And we wanted to move back to Europe, and then she was able to get a visa to live in Germany. We were like, okay, well, that's a language to learn. So have you ever thought of learning languages and stuff?
Well, you know what, Andrew, like, it's funny you should say that, because during lockdown everyone's like taking up different skills and talents. Well, I don't know, but I was looking into Duolingo, and I was trying to see whether it was accessible with my iPhone and, you know, being blind and all. And I managed to turn my voiceover that reads out my screen reader on my iPhone, into Spanish. And I have this mode now where I can make my whole phone Spanish. And honestly, I've only just started. I'm on like lesson two.
What could you say from what you've learned so far? I'm obsessed with languages, by the way. So
yeah. Oh, are you? Well, I'm working on my accent, but yeah, I'm on Niño. Or Niña, which is little girl and little boy, I think.
Yeah, that was good. I learned, like, so I speak five languages, including English. So it's really four foreign languages, but I say five because it sounds better. But obviously I speak English because that's my language.
Yeah.
But I learned them all with, there's Michelle Thomas. He's this Polish fella, and he's amazing. He's got this amazing history, and he escaped from Nazi concentration camps and stuff. He's dead now, but he taught like Woody Allen and people like that. And he's got this whole thing where like you basically sit in their audio things, and you basically sit in on a lesson that he does with like two people, and one of them's quite fast at learning and the other one's quite slow, so you often find yourself sort of in between them. And he says from the first episode, I don't want you to write anything down. I don't want you to overthink things. You just listen, and make sure you listen 5-10 minutes every day. By the end of it, you will be speaking the language.
Wow, I didn't know that, because I thought it was all quite visual. But I mean, I guess that's just an assumption and a wrong one at that. love that. I'm going to check him out. Thank you so much.
I think that visual thing is actually a bit of a con. And I think that's just my opinion of it. And obviously, you know, I don't want to be like sued by one of those Duolingo. But they make like a big deal out of it. Rosetta Stone, all these things. It's like, look at the apple. And that's how you remember what an apple is. Michelle Thomas does none of that. And he just talks about the interesting things about like the things that we share, for example, with Spanish, and how you can work out what a Spanish word would be from the English word. And there's nothing visual about it at all.
Oh, wow. That is so amazing. That's how you learn, Andrew.
Yeah, that's how I did mix it. I mixed it with Duolingo. I mixed it with, I read Harry Potter every night in German or whatever. So like, obviously there are some parts that are visual in that sense, but like the main one, without a doubt, the main one was Michelle Thomas. And the thing is, it's not crazy money, but it's quite expensive. But, you know, people find ways of getting these.
As you're talking, I'm like, wow, Spanish Braille. And obviously Braille, raised dots, feel with my fingers, that's how I read, sort of thing. And I always used to be such a visual learner. I lost my eyesight when I was 17. So I've only been blind really for 7 years. So I always tell people, you know, really, I'm a 7-year-old in terms of not my obviously thinking brain, but in my tactile learning, you know, brain, yeah, how I work things out methodically with my fingers, you know, that's a whole different ball game when you train your fingers to be that sensitive. So yeah, I don't know. I think it would be really interesting because obviously there are Spanish blind people. So
Braille, it's amazing how little we all know. And that's what's so amazing about your videos and what you do, because you're just explaining things in such a like simple and well-communicated way for us all to be able to just understand it. Things that we've just maybe we've wanted to ask and have never wanted to sort of ask. Braille, how does Braille work? So obviously it's different, like Spanish would be different Braille totally. Is it like a system of letters?
Yeah, so it's a system of raised dots, and a cell, one cell is one character, so it's 6 dots that make up a cell, and it looks like, to the visual person, a domino almost. Okay. And if you go leftwards down the column, so dot 1 is top left, dot 2 is just underneath that, and dot 3 is just underneath that, and then dot 4 is your top right, and so on down to dot 6. And it's just different combinations of that, and it's how I sort of learnt it. You have to really limber your fingers up almost. So my Braille teacher used to give me rice in a massive box, and she was like, right, what I want you to do is distinguish between basmati rice, long grain rice, quinoa, and go. And then there was different types of pasta shells as well, and you have to feel each little ridge, and it's rewiring your brain, isn't it? So yeah, the universal language for English speakers is called United English Braille, and it actually only unified English Braille. It actually only unified probably when I was still at school, so 2012, 2011. And I remember some of the symbols changing so we could sort of be more unified with America, because obviously the world is way more international from when Louis Braille first introduced Braille in like the 1800s. So yeah.
Wow. Crazy. So does the system work the same way? So if you learn how to speak Spanish, would you then be able to read Braille, or would you have to learn a whole different Braille system?
I'm not sure if they have UEB in Spain. This is the thing. This is something I would... It's crazy because even in my brain, I'm like, oh, Duolingo. And I instantly think of the sighted way maybe to do things because I have had sight. So yeah. I don't instantly like look for the non-visual answer, which is so weird to say out loud. Yeah. I think I won't start doing that until I've been blind for as long as I had been sighted. Definitely visual Lucy is still very present, but I think, I think in terms of the Spanish language, it must sort of work off UEB just in a sort of different sense, because there's obviously umlauts, and I mean that's probably German, isn't it? But
there are accents though.
Accents and everything. So yeah, I don't know how that would work, but like for instance, dot one is A, dot two, dot one and two is B, Dot okay. one and four is C. So, and for instance, and then if you want to do a number, it would be a number sign and then dot A. So number one is A, number two is B.
Okay, so it might work. Sign. It might work then. I'm sure it must do. I have no idea, actually.
My fiance is learning Chinese and all the characters, but he's completely sighted. So that is just a minefield. Listening to him and the different tones is crazy. So.
Oh my yeah. God. Chinese, I would not even go near that because it looks impossible. I mean, I'm both jealous and sort of impressed by your fiance. How long have you been with him? What's he like? Is he nice?
Yeah. Oh my gosh, he's amazing. So I actually saw Ollie when I could see. We got together when we were 16, 17. I went blind 2 months into our relationship. And yeah, we've just childhood sweethearts, kind of pukey. We met like because we're both from Birmingham, other sides of the city. I'm more from the north and he's more inner city. But yeah, no, we met at an Amtram because his family friend sort of ran it and I went because it was more local to me. So yeah, and I always say I was Wendy in Peter Pan and he was the pirate that tried to kill me. So that's funny.
You met at what was it? An Amtram?
Amateur Dramatics Club. Oh. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, are you a good actress?
I'd say I was a better presenter, Andrew. I was the best actress, to be honest. It was just super fun.
How did you get into presenting? Was it something that you always wanted to do?
Oh, yeah, honestly, I always say there was a sighted Lucy dream and a non-sighted Lucy dream. So I initially went to law school to study law straight out of school, but halfway through my A-levels, I went blind. So it was really in my formative years that I had this trauma sort of pushed upon me through no fault of my own. And I think because it was so formative, I sort of just went with, you know, the steady route. And I think I always just thought, you know, I didn't really have time to think about myself because I was thinking about the grief of what was put upon me. And anyway, I loved law school. I did it for a year, but I actually had to drop out just because of mental health problems because I'd only been blind for a year and I was dealing with all of that. And I sort of had some time out to just sort of think. And to be honest, to put it bluntly, I had a bit of a mental breakdown just to deal with everything because at such a young age. Yeah. And then I thought, you know what? I need to find people like me. I will feel so much better if I can have some people out there that are like-minded. And that's when my YouTube channel was born. And Ollie, bless him, my fiance, did help with the video editing. And it sort of started from there, my love of like wanting to present things. And I mean, I was only sitting in front of my camera like, hi, I'm Lucy. I was kind of timid. Yeah. But it did spark from there, my love for it. And then I thought, wow, like, instead of being sad I'm not at law school anymore, it was a really bold decision because all my friends were at uni and it was kind of the thing to do. To sort of book against that was really hard for me as a young girl. And I thought, no, I'm going to stop this. You know, because people were saying to me, it's only 3 years of your life. And I thought, well, 3 years of your life is great. It's sort of, I don't know, I feel like my eyesight definitely made me feel so much more like I could make decisions and feel in control because something so out of control happened to me. I just felt like I could make more definite decisions. I don't know.
Yeah, so. No, it makes sense. And the other thing is that, I mean, it's obviously subjective, but I mean, let's be honest. I mean, presenting is a lot more fun than law, isn't it?
Oh my God, definitely. Sorry, that's my guide dog grumbling. Olga!
I couldn't hear. That's Olga then, is it? The famous Olga.
It's the famous Olga.
You don't. It doesn't really matter. But do you? How would you feel about putting the webcam on, or is it you don't want to do that? Or
I could do. Right. So we've got the fiance here, and he's just helping me put the tripod up.
Okay, great. What was the fiance's name?
Ollie.
I did hear that, but I thought you might have been talking about Olga. It's a similar name.
Oh my gosh, so similar. my nan always goes Ollie. I mean Olga. Bless her. But Ollie, Olga's siblings are all like Otto, Oreo, Ollie. So, okay. Yeah.
Did you name her or was she already named?
No, it was Guide Dogs for the Blind. Oh, is she? Has she, honey? It's Guide Dogs for the Blind who sort of named her. And yeah, they just have litter names for the they're all like named like alphabetically or their letters, so it's really okay. Cute.
She is absolutely gorgeous.
Oh, I love her. I'm going to get her on my lap now. Olga! Carrot! Carrot! Yes! Come on then! Oh, she bumped into something. Come on, be on Andrew's podcast. Come on.
Oh, I can see you. Olga. Oh, she's yawning.
She's here.
So sweet. But I have seen you talk about how it can be confusing for Olga when people come up, you know, while she's crossing the street with you and people are like, oh, look, it's a dog. And, you know, people should, is that right? People shouldn't, or they should at least engage with you first if they want to talk to Olga.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think sometimes I have been on harness with her and then someone's gone, oh, goochie goo, or like gone, you know, and then I'm like, oh my gosh, they're talking to the dog. No. I hope she's not distracted. So yeah, it's just about the distraction levels of her. And hopefully, I mean, she's got a lot better in her older age, but certainly when we're a new partnership, there's like a 6-month bedding in period. And she was definitely like, Mom, I'm not going to listen to you. Who are you, this stupid woman? I'm just going to look at you until, because we're basically trained to be dog trainers. It's a bit crazy, the learning curve, getting a lovely guide dog like Olga. Initially, you're like, oh my gosh, there's so much to learn. And I got her when I was 18. Hello, Licky Bum.
How old are you now?
I got her when I was 18. I'm 24 now. Okay. So, yeah.
So she's got to be, what, 6 or 7 or 8 years old or something?
She's 8 now. She's coming up to retirement.
Oh, no. They retire, do they?
They retire between 8 and 10 years old. But because Olga's been... We lived in London and now we live just outside London in Milton Keynes, and then commuting and doing different jobs and learning the BBC route and learning originally where I'm from in Birmingham, go to school with me, go to uni with me. She's trying to lick my face now. She just has got so much in this little brain that I think, bless her. I mean, she went on an aeroplane for with me in the travel show for the first time ever. And it was just to show how she can guide me on a plane. We went to Edinburgh.
God. So sweet.
Yeah.
Let me ask you then, because for me, I'm mad about dogs. And I had a dog when I was younger and I slept in the bed with the dog because I loved her so much. It was a little miniature dachshund and she was just the love of my life. And yeah, I was so close with her. But I mean, the relationship between somebody and their guide dog must be something else. Is that right? Is it like a really intense close bond?
Oh my God. Honestly, if you say that you slept in your bed with your dog, I want that for her, but they're not really allowed on beds and sofas. But know that intense feeling that you feel with a pet. But with Olga and me, because I had a pet dog when I was younger and then I went blind, and then suddenly you have to trust this thing, this beautiful being with your life. Basically, you're holding onto this harness, and she's only like got a brain of a 2-year-old, apparently, but she's so clever. But I was obviously apprehensive as going into this, like, oh my God, do I trust a dog with my life? Like, what are they going to do? Obviously, you want to see the capacity of what they're capable of. And this whole training process, psychologically and mentally, it's very like, I don't know, you've got a headache and you're really trying to trust this being. And eventually, when you are bedded together, it's the best partnership in the world. And I think because she's my first dog, and they always say with your first guide dogs, I don't know what my life would be without this thing here. Like, I'm with her more than I am with humans. And I know her personality. I'm like, oh, stop being a douchebag or whatever today. And stop being so annoying. Like, you're getting on my nerves. And she's like, oh, loose. I don't know. It sounds really crazy, like I'm a crazy dog woman. But honestly, I have conversations with her, and I don't know. I would say it is deeper. Obviously, I wouldn't want to undermine everyone else's bonds that they have with their dog because it's a massive thing. But yeah, she definitely, I have her with my life.
And we won't tell anyone that she's actually on the sofa right now then.
No, don't tell anyone, Andrew. I think she's coming up to retirement, and I think lockdown has sped up her retirement significantly. I think I'm actually going to do a written piece about this for BBC News soon, like a freelancing style piece. And I just think it's just about highlighting the fact that guide dogs aren't robots, and the process of me and Olga always going to London and always being at Euston and being that dynamic couple as we are, and she's so cheeky, she needs that environment to almost spur her on and keep her young. And you know, if she doesn't have that, she hasn't had it for like 6 months, she's gone around the block with me, but yeah. Now she's like, Mom, are we really going around the block? This is not what we do. We don't do this. What are you yeah. doing? So she's like, what is the point to this? She's very much one of those dogs, like, what is the point?
Yeah. Do you think, does she know that you can't see? Do you think she's aware of that?
So I think she's a bit more now, but I only think that because I've tripped over her quite a lot of times in my new place. I've been here, I bought a house with my fiance 10 months ago. And honestly, she's got in the way quite a lot because I've been trying to learn my environment through my spatial awareness and my touch. And I've tripped over her now a lot. And now she's starting to move out of the way. But since, like, till then, she wasn't. And I was like, dog, I love you, but surely you must know. I don't think they necessarily do.
Yeah.
I don't know what they think.
We want to believe that they really are thinking on a deep level and that they understand the nuances of whether somebody can see or not. But it's probably actually they've just been taught by giving, you know, they give them a treat if they cross the road when the car's moving in the right and that kind of thing. So
yeah,
that is
definitely
a shame.
I think honestly, I thought that they were more superhuman. I mean, the adverts are amazing. Like, without the awareness of guide dogs, I wouldn't have the chats that I do have when I'm out and about. But I think, yeah, with Olga, when I first got her at 18, I was like, this dog has to poo before I walk anywhere? What?
Oh, my God.
So, yeah.
Oh, God, that's a whole other part that you don't think about.
Oh, I didn't. I just thought she was just going to take me and she's not going to be distracted by pigeons. It was all going to be fine. I would just walk to school like nothing had happened and she was the eyes. And that is very much the case at some points when you're doing well. But sometimes you're having an off day like everyone. So,
yeah. And so you've got to go with like bags all the time, I suppose, for the dog poo.
Oh, yeah. And that was it. That was a TikTok comment. People are like, how do you pick up your dog's poo? Like, how does that even work? And it honestly, fair enough. Like, if you couldn't see, I guess, but it's all about leash relieving, following the lead, knowing her so well and feeling the movements of her. And I mean, I won't go into it, but I did a TikTok on it. I thought, why am I doing this? But there we go.
Yeah.
I don't mind. I'll answer anything for me, Andrew, to be honest.
Yeah, I think that's what's so, it's so nice. And I think maybe it's right that a lot of this disabled people, is disabled people the right word? People with disabilities?
Yeah, disabled people, yeah. I'm fine with that, but obviously everyone's different. But yeah, I think disabled people with disabilities interchanging, that's what I use. But thank you for asking.
It's refreshing that you do speak so. Do you know you were on one of these things? I think it was BBC Ideas, and you were talking about some very interesting things. There was a fella with you who had replaced his eyeball with a Union Jack. Did you know that?
No.
It was...
Well, BBC Ideas.
Yeah, you were talking...
That was a couple of months ago, wasn't it?
I don't know. I was just like doing all my...
It was a couple of months back.
I was doing all my research. I was sort of...
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, and it was...
Oh, I didn't know, though.
There were two other guys, and I think you were sort of the main person, and you were doing like the voiceover as well. And then there was another fella, you know, and then there was this guy, he'd been in the army...
Yes, sorry, I do know, but I obviously, because I don't see the visuals, I'm like, Amit Patel, who's an amazing campaigner.
Yes.
And then I was with another guy who was, an ex-army veteran, I think, and he's had his eyeball blasted off, I think, but I didn't know it was a Union Jack, so that's amazing.
It's like, it was like, at first I thought, is it just like a red eye? And I had a little closer look and it was a Union Jack in his eye. Like almost like like a fake eyeball, I guess. It was just a Union Jack. It's the scariest but coolest thing I've seen. I didn't know whether I was frightened or like in awe. But
wow, that is so cool. But yeah, I think Moorfields Eye Hospital, like the specialist centre as well, as I go there to get my eyes checked. Yeah, they do casts, and I think you can pay extra for having designs. Yeah.
Oh my God, it's like when you got braces and all of that, and you get like, you know, you red colours and blue colours. I don't know if you ever had that, but like everyone I knew had all their football colours as the braces on their teeth.
Oh my my gosh, honestly, the things that you can get customized these days, I mean, it's cool.
it's quite scary. We live in a scary world. Speaking of customizing one's appearance, what a segue that is. Your makeup has become a very important part of both your life and your career and your YouTube career and everything. Why is makeup? Yeah. Well, first I should say, so Blind Girl does her own makeup, and it's got 800,000 views at the moment. And that's sort of, and yes. You're so young in it.
Oh no, I'm like 17.
I know.
But honestly, Andrew, it's funny you should say that, because I actually have no makeup on today, because I thought, right, I'm going to have chilled vibes podcasting style. But I did another video called Blind Girl Does Her Own Makeup on TikTok recently of me doing all the steps, like an updated version. And I think, I don't know, it's crazy the response, isn't it?
Yeah, people really liked it, I guess. I mean, what do you think it was that touched people really about it?
Honestly, I think it is the curiosity again. I think that's why also you touched on TikTok and people being able to ask me anything. I think it is this curiosity that why would someone without any eyesight want to care about their appearance or really feel like it was fundamental to their well-being or whatever. I think also, I don't know, I think the internet is drawn by curiosity and clicks, isn't it? But I think it's just showing people as well that it is possible. And also, I think inspiration porn is a massive thing online. It's the term coined by Stella Young.
Right.
And a lot of disabled people buck against that sort of narrative that, you know, why do we have to be inspirational just because we're getting out of bed? But I think maybe that is driving the clicks somewhat. And I kind of I don't like the concept of inspiration porn, but I like the fact that I'm getting out there and that is a thing because it gives me a platform, if you get what I mean, Andrew.
I think you must, forgive me if I'm wrong about this, I can imagine you feeling in two minds a little bit, because on the one hand, that's what's going to get you out there and that's what people are really interested in, and you probably also want to be seen as a journalist in your own right.
Yeah. Yeah. 110%. Mm. Yeah. Sometimes it's so hard breaking free from the blindness narrative, I guess, because also I've always done stories, definitely at the BBC, about disability, and I love that. Like, I wouldn't, some part of me is like, oh my gosh, I love the journalism that I do in that sense, because it is putting the message of disability out there and the disabled message. But I just think also sometimes I just want to be Lucy. But I do believe 110%, once I've answered these questions and put them out there in the world, the education for me, I believe it is my duty, and it will make my life better in the long run as soon as I've answered all these questions. And then people get down to the nub of who I really am. Like on my live streams on TikTok, people are like, oh, what's your favorite color? What's this, that, the other? And what's your favorite dessert or dinner? And that's me, that's Lucy. And I wouldn't say blindness isn't me, it's just a massive part of me.
Yeah.
That people are curious about. So I am happy that I'm able to have a brand brand around it, and there's awareness there. But yeah, sometimes, like, yeah, as you say, I'm 50-50.
So. Yeah, I feel like you should be able to make a documentary now about anything, or, you know, nothing to do with anything to do with you. But that, I mean, that's also part of a wider point, I think, about identity politics and how, like, I think presenters, I mean, because I'm one as well, and I feel like we are sort of shoehorned into certain things. So I'm often told, because my background, my family are Jewish, and I'm often told, like, that I, you know, if I say I want to do a documentary about this or that, they'll say, but you're not that identity. You know, for example, I wanted to do one about gay conversion, which is horrible. And people were telling me, wow. but you're not gay, so you can't do that, that kind of thing. And they often say to me, why don't you do one about Jewish stuff and about Orthodox Jews and extremist Jews and that kind of thing? And I just think, well, I'm a presenter. I don't want to have to do.
Yeah.
Why have I got to do that? Similarly, why should you have to always do something? And the other thing I saw recently was, like, there was a big thing about diversity in TV, on-screen talent, I mean, and the most underrepresented group of people were people with disabilities. Is that something that winds you up?
It's something that makes me so sad when I know for a fact that, I mean, my agent Andrew, he's amazing name, by the way, that is just, is just so passionate about this as well, because most of his clients have disabilities, and it's something that all of us really do shout from the rooftops about, because the diversity levels of on-screen talent, they could be so much higher. I am just a phone call away, you know, and I just think embedding us in more of the programming and the scheduling would be so easy, in some senses. And I just, it does make me upset, Andrew. It really does, because that measurement could be load higher.
Yeah, I think so.
So
that is sad, but maybe they'll start getting there. I hope so. I mean, you're at the beginning of your career as well. You're so young. Wait, what did you say? 24?
Yeah.
Yeah, so
yeah, young. I'm 24. So yeah, I agree. I think, you know, that I'm chipping away at things, and I'm hoping to get a few things commissioned. And I think, you know, that the main thing about this that you probably resonate with is that you just have to keep going. Like, if one commission it doesn't work, you know, you just keep going as a journalist
to
get your ideas out there. You know, it's often, don't you think, it's the right place at the right time, and maybe more of a commissioning agenda at some points, and you sort of have to test the water as well, whether your idea fits for that day.
Yeah, and it also helps if you happen to have like a parent or something who's famous or in at the BBC. I'm not bitter or anything, but there's a lot of nepotism from certain people. I won't name names. But yeah, it's right. I mean, I always hear about like, you know, J.K. Rowling or the Beatles or whoever. You hear these stories like, oh, you know, that was rejected 10 times or something before it became, you know. And I think 10 times, I was rejected 10 times before breakfast today. Like 10 times is nothing. I get rejected. Honestly, I probably get 50 rejection emails a day. I get an accepted thing probably once every year or two. Out of thousands, it's just insane. There were just too many people trying to.
You know what? It doesn't make me that. That's not surprising at all. I would say probably a similar rate, but it's crazy. I guess it shows our resilience. You know, we're resilient people. You have to be a resilient person to be a journalist, I think, definitely. And I mean, I came through the route of the extended digital news scheme where. We're all for disabled journalists, so I had no connections, and I think you just have to hustle and do the grind.
Yeah, and how's it all going now? So I couldn't find like there was like a link to footage of you sort of presenting on Radio One, which is, you know, amazing, and I couldn't actually find the footage. But so what was that like, and how many times have you presented for Radio One?
Yeah, so I did two shows between Christmas and the New Year just gone, and it was absolutely amazing. It was like to get new talent onto the station, and I was due to do another show in April and then again in September, but it just, for whatever reason, just because due to COVID regulations and guidelines, because I need sort of an access worker in there and extra people to sort of make the studio accessible, because there's no current studio out of the 60 London studios that are accessible for blind people.
What?
So I'm working with BBC engineers. Yeah, it's crazy. Wow. So I'm working with BBC. It was very much a blue tack type of thing.
But it's, and they're quite,
on those 2 days.
Aren't they quite new as well, a lot of the studios there?
I think so. So I wouldn't wholly blame them in terms of just the setup and things, but equally, I think they are being very, I don't know, they're being very amazing in terms of like listening to us, because I know a few other people. I've worked at BBC Ouch, the podcast within the news section, and Damon and Emma there also, they are blind, and they're just, you know, backing me up and saying, let's get these studios so we can use them. And I think ultimately, because there is so much in our brain as a blind person, I found with my shows, they were absolutely amazing. The adrenaline, I was like, yes, let's do this. Like, it's so cool. It was like my dream to be there. But I think it was kind of brain overload, because, you know, I'm thinking about what's on the screen. I'm thinking about the people who are coming in, 81199, all their comments. And I think at that point, because the blue tack was maybe somewhat in a different place, I wasn't used to it. It's also about muscle memory and doing it for a good week solid. And I didn't have that amount of time in the studio bookings because it's such a busy place, which is fair enough. And there's just a few things that didn't align that that I think maybe if they did, then it would have given me a better experience. But I think they are willing to change that. And Alid, the controller of Radio One, has been in touch. So, yeah, we'll see. I'm only hoping for great things.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed.
Well, why not? I mean, you've got off to a great start at 24 to already have been like presenting yourself, you know, on Radio One and the other stuff you've done. I mean, it's ahead of most people at your age, I think. I think anyway. I don't know anything, but you sound very confident when you which in a very nice way. Like, do things faze you? I know you've run a marathon, and also, I mean, most people again at 24, 23 going on to present Radio One would be, you know, in an absolute in a mess the night before, just, you know, worrying. And how do you manage that kind of thing?
I think me being confident. Oh, Olga, you want to go, darling? Sorry, Olga, the guide dog is moving. I think for me, I think if I'm not confident, I'm not doing myself the justice that I always feel like I'm not giving myself enough credit if I'm not confident. And I also feel that me being confident makes me approachable as a blind lady. I think if I don't put my best foot forward and always be like, oh, I'm Lucy, hi, you know, I feel like people can't then relate to me. I don't know whether this is a little niggle in the back of my head. I just think if I don't talk first, people are like, oh, how do I talk to her? Do I say look or see or watch? Maybe, you know, I change my language with her, or do I tiptoe around her? Or I don't know. I feel like I'd rather be that person like, hi, than like the opposite, and then people don't know where they stand with me. So I almost feel like I have to overcompensate. But also when I'm presenting, oh my gosh, yeah, I was totally like, I don't know whether this is too much information, but like running to the toilet before that. Like, that was the most nerve-wracking time of my life. Like, it was so scary. Okay. But I sort of live off that as well.
Yeah, I'm relieved to hear that, actually, because like, because you know what? Because you see people and they just seem so composed and so together, and they're younger than me and this and that. And I just think, how? Because I would be the same. I'm absolutely terrified every time I do anything. So it's good to know that we all are, I suppose, except psychopaths.
Honestly, I think I was saying to my fiance, like, oh my gosh, what do I do? Like, you know, I think it's only natural. Like, obviously I'm there because I want to do it. But I think if I was just sort of talking to, I don't know, the camera, like I always done, that's a bit different, because you sort of get your rhythm and your routine. If it's your show that you're doing all the time, I think I'd hopefully get, like, the more I'm in the studio, the more of a rhythm you gain.
Yeah.
You know, so.
I remember hearing the comedian Lee Evans saying that even after like going for 30 years, he would vomit before going on every time. So.
You know what? That makes me feel better.
Yeah. No, yeah.
Way better.
Yeah, because like I say, everyone's so composed all the time. You're like, who are you? You're all robots, but they're not. You know, they're all like us, I guess.
Yeah. Well, this is the hope, definitely. Yeah,
absolutely.
A few decades ago, private citizens used to be largely that. Private. What's changed? The internet. Think about everything you've browsed, searched for, watched or tweeted. Now imagine all of that data being crawled through, collected and aggregated by third parties into a permanent public record. Your record. Having your private life exposed for others to see was once something only celebrities worried about. But in an era where everyone is online, everyone is a public figure. To keep my data private when I go online, I turn to ExpressVPN. Did you know there are hundreds of data brokers out there whose sole business is to buy and sell your data? The worst part is they don't have to tell you who they're selling it to or get your consent. One of these data points is your IP address. Data harvesters use your IP to uniquely identify you and your location. But with ExpressVPN, my connection gets rerouted through an encrypted server and my IP address is masked. Every time I turn ExpressVPN on, I'm given a random IP address shared by other ExpressVPN customers. That makes it more difficult for third parties to identify me and harvest my data. And the best part is how easy ExpressVPN is to use. No matter what device you're on, phone, laptop, or smart TV, all you have to do is tap one button to get protected. So if, like me, you believe that your data is your business, secure yourself with the number one rated VPN on the market. Visit expressvpn.com/heretics and get 3 extra months for free. That's expressvpn.com/heretics. Go to expressvpn.com/heretics to learn more. Hey, it's Andrew. If you're enjoying Heretics, there's another podcast I want to recommend to you, especially if climate change, global conflicts, and an upcoming election are making you feel like we're on the brink of disaster. What Could Go Right is hosted by Progress Network founder Zachary Carabel and executive director Emma Varvalukas. On What Could Go Right, the hosts sit down with expert guests to discuss the world's most pressing issues without resorting to pessimism or despair that we hear so often. Instead, they look back at how far society has come and look forward at what it will take to achieve an even brighter future. Is progress on the way? They may not have all the answers, but on What Could Go Right, they're asking the key questions. Tune in to hear interviews with upcoming guests like writer Coleman Hughes, CNN host Fareed Zakaria, and economist Alison Schrager. If you're looking for a weekly dose of optimistic ideas from smart people, join them every Wednesday on What Could Go Right, available wherever you get your podcasts.
So tell me, what led, do you mind talking about that? What led to your blindness and how it happened and everything?
Yeah, that's fine, Andrew. So I have a genetic condition called incontinenti pigmenti. It's a really long way of saying IP, I guess, but it's a Latin name. And it's also coined as Bloxenberg syndrome. Okay. I think just named after the consultant that founded it. But basically, it runs down the female line of my genetics on the X chromosome. It's a dominant gene. And my mom passed it to me, but she doesn't have any sight abnormalities or anything, and neither did my late grandma. It was a bit of a weird one. I went for a routine eye check at age 8, and they just basically said rush her to the hospital. So I think, you know, from that perspective, I was saying to my mom, like, oh gosh, do we have to go to the eye hospital for a random eye appointment after school? I think me and Alice were like, oh, we don't want to, my sister, we were like, yeah, oh, we don't want to go for an eye check. You know how you do when you're younger, you like. And I found myself randomly at Birmingham Eye Hospital, like several hours later, and them just being really, really worried about me because there was bleeding at the back of my eye. And it sounds really painful, but it's not. It's it kind of presents itself a lot like diabetic retinopathy, where the back of my eye bleeds and then sort of the wallpaper of your eye, which is the retina, sort of pings off and dies. And that did that gradually.
If you didn't go for that check, what might have happened?
I probably think that it would have just got worse and worse. I don't know, because it was this thing, Andrew, that when I was younger, all I knew was the eye hospital. Like, I would go so frequently for them to check on it because the doctors and consultants don't know about IP. It's an absolute, they have no idea, bless them. It's so rare. And it is it presents itself as a skin condition. If you look on Wikipedia, it's literally like skin condition, blah, 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 blah. Blistering of the backs of the legs. It kind of is like chicken pox, but like scabs. And I had that when I was a really, really young baby. And that's how we sort of knew that it was IP, because the skin consultant sort of diagnosed that when I was age 4. But the eyesight, we never knew that it was a thing. And I think just purely because they always used to check it and they never went in for like laser surgery, or, you know, they could laser the scarring, but they never did that for me because they didn't want to change the look of the eye. I had quite good vision back then, like just under adult vision. I could read signs from like 10 meters away. They didn't want to disturb the quite crazy situation that was going on back there, you know, if they didn't need to. So. Yeah. Don't know. They just left it for years and years and years. I don't know. I don't really know what would have happened, because they just were looking at it. But I think it was nice to know that I had the reassurance of the doctors, and they were chatting about it, and it was putting IP on the radar. I think there's only 1,200 people in the whole world with incontinence frequency, and then about 3% of those people have eye abnormalities, and then I don't know how many people are blind, but hardly any. So
wow. Yeah. So yeah, your condition, so 3% of what, like 1,000, what's that, 30?
I don't know. Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Is that?
Yeah. I think so.
I am the boy.
You can tell we're not mathematicians. We're journalists.
Oh, God. There's some people who are just shaking their head listening to this when they listen to it. They're just going to be like, oh, my God. He thinks it's 30. What kind of. And she agreed.
And I just said, yeah.
Yeah. What an idiot. Both of them. What is it? Let's do this right. Come on. Thousands. So 1% of 1,000 must be 10. Yeah, so it's got to be.
Yes, it's got to be about 30-something people, yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Actually, it's crazy being on the internet, though. A lady inboxed me, and she said she's blind in one eye, and she lives in the UK. So I might be chatting to someone who knows a bit about.
Oh, with the same condition?
Yeah, our condition? Yeah, with the same condition, yeah.
That's amazing.
But it's so rare that but I'm also on this Facebook group that's called Incontinenti Pigmenti Worldwide, and, you know, it's all cool.
The internet's amazing, isn't it?
So
did you at that point, were you sort of prepared going into teenage years for, you know, at some point my sight will leave me?
I said to my mom, I'm not thinking about this. I used to get so grouchy on hospital days because, and my mom would know that I'd be in an absolutely horrible mood because I didn't think about it the rest of the time, Andrew. I didn't want it to be a thing. I wanted to be a normal girl. And I had enough eyesight to just pretend that it wasn't happening until I was probably about 14. It was something that was definitely in my life. I was always at eye hospital, but I'd do that day and then my eyes would, you know, they'd have the drops in, dilating drops. I'd sit my chin on a crazy looking contraption. They'd shine this bright light in my eye. They'd have this like hat that looked like a miner's hat.
Yeah.
That had like a massive, crazy light, and they'd have this like little magnifying glass that then they'd put. Well, it was like that big, like so. How would I describe that? So it's like 10 centimeters, and they literally shone this hat right at my eye, and I would be like, ah! Oh, it was like I was looking into the surface of the sun. It was crazy. But and when I had sight, that used to hurt me a little bit, but doesn't so much now. They always use it. Oh. Where was I going with this point?
About whether you knew.
Yeah, I didn't know. Yeah, I didn't really, to be honest, I didn't really think about it. And yeah, and I pushed it away. But I always used to say to my mom, and this sounds really horrible because I would never, ever wish this now. But I remember banging into a door, like straight head first into a door when I was losing my eyesight a bit more, 16 years old-ish. And I'd say, Mom, I just don't know if I go blind, whether I will be okay, whether I just want to not be here anymore. She's like, what do you mean? And I don't know. It was very emotional. It was definitely took up a massive part of my childhood. I think it made me grow up a lot quicker. Yeah, really did.
Is there any truth in that thing? I've often heard, you know, they say somebody who's won the lottery and then somebody who's, you know, lost something like your sight or something, a year later or 2 years later, they both go back to the same happiness. Have you found that, or are there lingering moments of sadness?
Yeah, I would say, as I said, for the first few years, I sort of had a mental breakdown with it because I think I was so young. And then, would I say that's true? I think I have bad blind days. And that's what I always coin them as. Like, I'm never going to necessarily get rid of the sadness because I think being blind is very much like an everyday type of thing. Like, you're constantly reminded that you're in this sighted world that isn't made for you.
Yeah.
And, you know, honestly, hand on heart, I wouldn't necessarily get my sight back tomorrow. Like, I'm happy with my life. I love being blind Lucy now, but it's taken a lot of counselling and a lot of support from the people around me to be able to say that sentence. And I think, you know, I do get in a taxi and sometimes, you know, I'm asked whether I can feed myself or, you know, basic questions that I guess that are maybe amplified on TikTok, which I kind of laugh at now. But to start off with, as a young girl at 19, being asked by a grown person driving me to wherever in a taxi, whether I can feed myself, whether I can eat, whether carrots will save me, I just needed to wear glasses, all these different conversations. I'm like, oh my gosh, like, how is the awareness of disability not taught in schools? And it used to get me so mad. I'd go home and cry and cry and cry and not get over it and just think the world hated me and that I would never be accepted or understood. And I think when I got into the media world, I finally found my voice, and that's why I love it so much. But yeah, to answer your question, I think you do. I think I don't necessarily hate being blind anymore, but the trauma of that day when the last thing I ever saw was that hospital room, and that being my last memory of sight, and that trauma of suddenly waking up from an operation that didn't save anything, and the consultant coming in his jeans on a Saturday morning going, how many fingers am I holding up? That will haunt me probably for the rest of my life.
There was hope that the surgery would save your sight.
Yeah, when I was 17, it was sort of the last ditch attempt to try and, they were cutting away my retina and sort of hoping that I would see from some part of it. But yeah, I think I don't go to counselling for being blind. I go to counselling for the trauma the sighted. And I think it's all about this medical versus social model of disability. When you think about it, you know, social model says that the world around me is the thing that's disabling me, not my disability. And the medical model says there's something wrong with me. Mm. And it's just about shifting your mindset.
God, I can see from what you were saying before, there must be this real temptation, you know, the inspiration porn thing. And I guess it's partly inspiration porn and partly like, as you were saying, you don't know how people are necessarily going to react to you. So you always want to put this positive thing forward. Yeah, I guess sometimes you might want to just say, look, I had a really sad moment and I want to be able to talk about the sadness without all this. I think people want such a simple, happy ending or all the time. That must have been horrific waking up, I suppose, and feeling disorientated as you do when you wake up from a surgery anyway, at the best of times.
You've hit on something there. I think this confidence that I exude, it's definitely real. But as I say, if I didn't have it, I don't think that people would relate to my story as much. And that's what I want. I think that personally for me does break down barriers. People go, oh, Lucy, why are you so confident? How are you so confident? I had to be, you know, people write in my comments, you know, I just couldn't be blind. I don't know what I'd do. I wouldn't want to be here if I was blind. I said the same things to my mom. You have to be, if you want to live life, I think you have to deal with whatever's thrown at you. And, you know, what else would I have done, Andrew? You know, what can you do? You know, you have to. So I think also, I want to put a positive spin on it because I don't believe I'm broken fundamentally. And fundamentally, I do feel that without sight, people do believe I'm broken. And I want to prove to people that I'm not. And if I don't put forward it, that's why I don't want to put forward the sadness, because I don't want to show people that I can feel broken sometimes.
Yeah.
And this is traumatic for me. So, yeah, it's very mixed in my head.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Well, that's not, I mean, your fault. That's sort of a society thing, isn't it? And I think you're right that I think inspiration porn is such a fantastic term for it, because it so seems like that. And I guess, I mean, the goal must be eventually that you're able to just talk like this and or just talk about other stuff. You're talking about, you know, the news or whatever it might be. And I mean, at the same time, I'd say this so you don't feel totally alone. I mean, we all do that to an extent. We all give off a different facade. We all worry that if I'm not showing how happy I am all the time, people are not going to talk to me. I suppose one difference is that because I have sight, so I can see very quickly if what I've said has made somebody perhaps not like me from their facial reaction or something. So I guess you're working in the darkness and you've got to just be happy and nice. And which also, by the way, is fantastic because it's obviously made the podcast much more exciting and entertaining and great. But I'm happy to be able to talk to you about the other side as well.
You know what?
Yeah.
I think so too. I think it's important to get a whole picture of a person. And I totally agree with you. I think I do love chatting about my disability. And as you say, I think that visual reminder that when you're speaking to someone, oh, they've accepted my comment, or oh, they liked that, or I've made them happy. I think I often do get that with my dad a bit, as in, like, he says a joke and he's a very jovial, jokey man. And sometimes he can have that, like, blunt, sarcastic British humour. And I love him for that. But sometimes I'm like, Dad, what did you just say? And Mom's like, he's smiling. And I'm like, well, laugh then, because audibly, I didn't really know what you meant by that joke. It was very harsh. He was like, no. Like, so in our family dynamic, even then, I am known to sort of take things a bit more seriously, I think. And it is that thing, I think, with social media, because I don't really have the visuals of other people necessarily in my comment section, it's kind of comforting for me in a way, because they're sort of in my world. Social media sort of makes me equal. And I felt like with Radio 1 as well, I was me. I was like presenting an anthem show. Like, it wasn't about my disability. It was just Lucy like rocking it. And I felt like, oh my gosh, so much of like me would have never dreamed 7 years ago when I lost my eyesight that that would even be a thing, that I would get that much acceptance on a stage like that. And I think it's coming.
Yeah.
The rumblings is coming. So, yeah.
Your dad's not Frank Skinner, is he?
No.
Just checking, because of the humour and stuff and the brummy.
Oh my gosh.
But
another Andrew in my life, Andrew Edwards.
Who's Andrew?
So many Andrews.
Who's Andrew?
My Andrew,
oh, your dad, of course, right?
Andrew is, yeah.
I thought he's got the same surname as you. What's yeah. God, I'm an idiot.
No, you're not.
I am. So then, you know what? Let's talk about not disability things. You were on an anthem show. Are you a big music person?
Yeah, you know what? I am that typical listen to the charts lady, but I also love indie stuff. So I'm into like Foles, Ra Ra Riot, Newton Faulkner, Bombay Bicycle Club. I'm like that typical girl with a bit of an acoustic guitar.
I'll pretend to know who all those cool bands are. And no, I do know who they are. I know that Newton Faulkner did that version of that other song. Da 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 da. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. I honestly really love him. No, I do know what you mean. I love Newton though, because he's got the dreads, and I actually saw him when I could see at this concert, and he's the way he like shreds his guitar, it's incredible. Like, and he had the globe on stage, and I just remember being mesmerized by his hair, and I don't know. Brit bar.
Isn't that now because he's white, isn't he? Is he white?
Yeah.
Oh, he could be in trouble.
Cool. I think he's got ginger dreads.
Yeah, he could be in trouble.
I don't know whether he's cut them off.
Oh, you're not allowed.
Maybe.
People don't like that. It's cultural appropriation.
Oh, that, you know what? maybe he needs to shave them off then.
I don't know. Didn't the guy from Simply Red also have dreadlocks like that?
I don't know.
And that's,
when did he have them?
This would have been
maybe not
decades ago.
Oh, fair. I don't know whether I've seen a picture of him.
What does Simply Red sing? Feel it in my fingers?
Yeah.
Is that them? Is that wet?
You know what? This is, do you get this thing where you listen to a band and a song and you're like, I love that song. And then you never quite remember the song name. I'm kind of always like, what is it?
Yeah.
My head.
Absolutely. Yeah. But then there's Shazam for that now.
Yeah, exactly.
So we've got that. You know, I used to love Robbie Williams. I like what you were saying about you can listen to the chart stuff and also, like, I think that's how it should be. I heard Robbie Williams was on the Adam Buxton podcast the other day. And Adam Buxton, who I love, was quite harsh on him and was quite like, your music was rubbish. And I just loved Robbie. I know, I felt bad for Robbie. I want to have him on this podcast, but I don't know how to get in touch with him. But
you know what? Mm. I love him and I always... It's really weird. Like that, it really sticks in my memory. My mom, I mean, he was an icon for parents like when I was younger. I don't know whether your parents loved him, but my mom certainly did. And so did my at the half.
I'm 31. I was the old person who loved him.
No, you weren't. Yeah. No, you weren't. You're only 5 or 6 years older than me. Yeah,
seven.
Seven. Yeah. No, I think my mom loved him. And I just remember this video. What song was it? But he was peeling his skin off in rollerblades. What is that?
I'll pretend I'm not a fanatic, so I don't know, but actually it's Rock DJ.
Yeah, I thought it was Rock DJ. But I remember being like, oh my gosh!
Yeah.
I mean, it was very dramatic and amazing, but I was only young and my mom loved that song.
That's one of the most horrific images to stay in your mind. I don't know why he had to do that. I mean, my girlfriend was, I showed her that video actually only quite recently and she was just like disgusted by it. It's horrific. It's absolutely, I don't think there's anything quite like it. He takes his skin off at the end of the video, Rock DJ.
I can't believe it. As a young girl, I was like, what are you watching?
Yeah. Got nothing to do with the song either, does it? I got the gift, going to stick it in the goal. I'll take my skin off.
Yeah.
Bloody hell, Robbie. I think the reason...
Rock and roll, eh?
Well, that's the thing. I think the reason people don't like him or don't want to like him or it's not cool to like him is because of what you say. So many mums liked him.
You reckon? Yeah,
that's
maybe.
What it is.
I think he's cool.
He's cool. He's fine. I'd love to chat with him. I'd love to look for aliens with him. He's big into aliens.
Ooh.
Yeah, he went.
Didn't know that.
Yeah, he went with a journalist called John Ronson, and they went.
I love him.
Oh, do you?
Yes. Yeah.
What is it? What's your favorite of his? If you listen, is it his podcasts and stuff?
Yeah, I listen to his Audible originals. So yeah. I listen to what was it called? He was interviewing quite a lot of porn stars and like behind the industry.
One called The Last Days of August, and then that was about the porn star.
I've listened to that.
Yeah, she killed herself. And then the other, Butterfly Effect was the first one.
Butterfly Effect. Yeah. Honestly, amazing.
Yeah. Don't you love his voice? I love his voice.
Yeah. It's so soothing.
Yeah.
And I don't know why I listen to some so much hard-hitting topics in bed. My fiance's like, Luce, turn it off. Like, I can't get to sleep. And I'm like...
That's so funny. I've got to get you a fan of this podcast. I've spoken to some pretty... We've got like a psychopath I spoke to, a woman who was a psychopath. Yeah, you're like that.
Oh, my God. No, but I listened to your one on that guy who... Oh, he was a pretty nice guy.
In prison.
He like did a Nazi salute with his dog.
That guy.
I was like, what?
Count Dankula. Like, you must have thought, what show am I coming on?
No. I thought it was quite cool. As in, like, you really did... Because initially I thought, will I like this guy? Like, I don't... And you kind of, like, brought another side out of him. So
that's so funny. It's what everyone's been... Well, no, some friends of mine have said, like, why did you have that guy on? He's a horrible Nazi. And then other friends have said, you know what? I didn't think I'd like him. And then I did. So it's a mixed. He's probably not the nicest bloke ever, but maybe didn't deserve to go to prison, though.
Honestly, like, I'm 50-50 phone a friend on it all.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
But his YouTube channel's very successful, evidently. So.
Oh, my God, yeah.
There we go.
Everyone, he's got such weird followers. They're like these weird... There's like a whole other world of people I got introduced to. And maybe you're more familiar than I am because you're on all the TikTok and everything. I do talk like I'm an old man and I'm only 31, but, you know.
I was going to say, you are so young. You're so young and you're literally... Yeah, anyway.
Oh, God, I feel older.
You can be on TikTok.
Every morning
I wake
up. You
know what? You should put all the little snippets of this podcast on TikTok and like go, and like, I don't know, like do loads of 10, 20 second clips and like you are the gold. You could just be called the gold or something. I don't know. It'd be cool. I'm marketing you. There you go.
My little sister would kill me. My sister's 13 and she's all into that and I'm not cool anymore. So she'd have to immediately leave TikTok if I went on there and did that. But I mean, I do put them on Twitter and all of that, but. The little clips, you know, like a minute long and everything, but bloody hell.
I love it.
I've got another question that everyone always wants to ask, so it's probably annoying for you because you're always responding to this, but I know the answer already actually, but because I've heard you talk about it, but do you see things in your dreams?
Yeah, everyone loves this question.
Yeah,
it's really fascinating to me. I want to preface this with I'm not all blind people because so many people go blind for all these different reasons and different conditions. So, you know, someone who went blind maybe a year ago might still have visual like memory and vision with inside their brain. But for me, I've been blind for 7 years and I just dream as if I can hear an audiobook. So I still feel things intensely and have intense emotions and feel like I'm really in the story and I can smell things and hear things. And but it very much is just an audiobook to me. Yeah.
Wow. I guess I wouldn't have thought that, because I would have thought that, I don't know, because I'm not actually using my eyesight to see things in my dreams.
Yeah, I mean, well, there's a stat though, Andrew, as well, that a lot more blind people like me have a lot more nightmares. And to be honest, I only have nightmares, and that sounds like I have nightmares all the time. I don't. I probably don't really have so many dreams, and I've never been like a one to have loads of dreams anyway, even when I was sighted.
Yeah.
But yeah. I don't know why I have nightmares, but
My God. Do you ever have that thing? I get this thing called sleep paralysis.
Oh, do you? What's that?
Oh my God, it is terrifying.
Is it?
Your mind, quite a few people get it as well. It's not that exceptional, but your mind wakes up and your body doesn't. So you're totally awake. I'm totally awake in bed. It's like I would have been having a horrible dream, for example, and it's like someone stabbing me or whatever it is, you know, the typical lovely dreams that I have at night.
Yeah.
And then I'll wake up in like a shock, but I can't move any part of my body, not even like a little toe or my eyes or my nose or anything. But I'm totally, totally conscious. And that will last for, I don't even know, because every second's like an eternity, because for some reason it's just the most shocking thing. And because every time you think, God, this is going to be the one time, and you're not entirely sure where you are, and you're sort of thinking, God, is my girlfriend next to me? I can't. So I end up doing, oh my God, it's mad. I end up doing this thing where I try really hard to make any kind of noise, but you don't know if you're making the noise in your mind or if it's happening out loud. So I'm in my mind, I'm going like that. But what's actually happening is I'm going like, like that, and eventually it's enough that my girlfriend will hear that and sort of shake me awake, and it will get me up. But so there's a shocking thing for
honestly, Andrew, that's horrific. How many times would you say you have that?
God, we need to do another episode about. You should have me on. You should do a podcast and have me on as a sleep paralysis guy. It started happening when I was about. I was about 18. It had never happened before, so you can imagine it was bloody shocking the first time, and it just suddenly happened. It happens more often if it's like a nap. So I never nap now, because that's what's going to probably happen. Or if I'm not sleeping well, it's like when you're in bad sleep and just your mind wakes up before your body. I mean, historically, that's been a big thing where people think that there's a demon on them. That's why they can't move. You know, that was the thought hundreds of years ago.
Right. And
some people feel like they see demons. I don't know. Anyway, I'm just talking about myself the whole time. That's why you're a good presenter.
Yeah.
You know what? It is the first time I've had one of the first times at least I've had another presenter or journalist on the show. And it is definitely the most I've talked about myself. So I think it is something. It's more of a conversation. It's nice.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I do know what you mean. We sort of bring it out of each other.
Yeah.
But that is so interesting. I think you should do a doc on that. That's so cool. I'd be well interested.
Maybe I should.
See if you can get that one commissioned, eh?
Oh, no one's going to commission anything. We will see.
Oh my God, if I come to Berlin, I'd love a coffee.
Oh, you've got
to. We should so hang out.
Yeah.
Oh, we should so hang out. That would be amazing.
Do you guys travel much?
You know what? We don't, to be honest, like, we should travel more. Like, in my head, oh, this is another, like, Lucy Blind thing. Like, I can't experience things. It's just stupid. Anyway, I've talked myself out of that one, and I'll be experiencing the culture of things. We want to go on, like, little mini breaks around Europe to just do, like, cool things, like, make pretzels or, like, I don't know, experience the culture. Not go to any, like, well, if it's an Audible museum, then cool. Hmm. But, yeah, no, we will. Long story short, yeah.
It was such a joy chatting to Lucy, and we've made sure that if she's ever in Berlin, we'll grab a coffee. It's always a little different chatting to a fellow journalist, because they do things like record the sound on their end without needing to be prompted, so it all sounds and feels nice and easy. It was a great experience. I do have some news. That podcast actually was recorded a couple of months ago, and we've since been informed that Olga the dog is taking a much-deserved retirement. I think she's still going to be staying with Lucy, but you can follow all of that and the latest updates on her YouTube, Twitter, and TikTok channels. Just search for Lucy Edwards or Lucy Edwards Blind. In the description, there'll be links and everything. And you can also get hold of her book, The Blind Beauty Guide ebook. Of course, it's coming up to International Day of Disabled Persons. Somebody told me recently of one way that we can all help blind people super easily without extending any energy. When you upload images to Twitter or Instagram or any other social media, there's usually a place to click to add alt text. This allows you to write a small description to show blind people what the image actually is. So that's something we can all do, and it's pretty easy. As I said before, there may or may not have been ads running in this podcast. I'm working with Acast on getting them installed. The pod has been running for 6 months, so I had to eventually monetize. Either way, you can get the ads-free version for eternity and help this podcast no end by signing up as one of my producers or directors. All sorts of memberships. Have a look on patreon.com, Patreon, Patreon, patreon.com/AndrewGold. Remember, there's a special offer running just for the next 2 weeks from November the 30th, 2020. If you get in there quick, you will get 15% off for your, you know, lifetime membership or whatever. You can cancel whenever you want as well. So it's just a monthly fee. There are other memberships too, where you can get access to the video version a month before anyone else and record your own questions to ask guests. Next week's episode with former Mormon Dan Beechen, for example, has a great question from one of my patrons in it. I would like to thank some of the new patrons who signed up last week. Bob Oak, Suzanne Ashton, Sarah Bowden, Chris Lewis, Anika Michelli, Jamie Robus, and Neil Gold. Thanks, Dad. And thanks to all of you for being the first to become producers and directors on patreon.com/AndrewGold. If you love the podcast and want to help but can't afford to contribute at the moment, as many people can't in these COVID times, then simply follow me on Instagram or Twitter on AndrewGold_OK. And you can also leave a review on Apple Podcasts. I'm aware many people don't have that, so don't worry if you don't. But if you're on Apple, for example, just last week, I got quite a few great ones. Al Kindi said, "Just listen, it's brilliant. If you're looking to restore or center your perspective, this is, capital letters, definitely a podcast for you. I've already told so many of my friends about this just so I can have someone to discuss the episodes with. I'm dreading the moment I run out of episodes now." Well, hopefully you won't run out of episodes, because I'm just going to keep on making them. Although if you are listening to more than one a week, I do love that. But yeah, you will eventually run out of them and have to wait a week, I suppose. But Mark Caldwell said, "Great pod. I only listened to this because of his conversation with Lyra Boroditsky and was impressed. New subscriber." Dr. 1008 said, "Great conversation. Stumbled upon this podcast, as one does. I'm not certain how, really, and I'm happy to report that it's since been added to my regular rotation. I think the show covers quite a broad spectrum and offers some interesting commentary on the wacky world we live in. People are the most puzzling and amazing part of our world, and I enjoy any means of hearing more of their diverse experiences. Cheers from Alaska, and keep the sweet action cooking." I should have said that last bit in an American accent, an Alaskan accent, which I imagine sounds slightly similar to a Canadian one. Lastly, Hoy Ogle said, "I like Mondays now, exclamation mark. Love listening to this podcast as I wander aimlessly through the streets of London. The subjects are always interesting. Well done, Andrew. Keep them coming." So thank you very much, all of you, for writing those, and the reviews help a lot, so please keep posting them. I'll be back next week with ex-Mormon Dan Beechen, so make sure to be there.